and welcome to this week's episode of the Spot Me podcast. My name is Danny O'Hanlon. Things are going to be a little bit different this week because Niall is in Dundalk acting in a play at the moment. He's probably, as we speak, he's on stage. That's the sound of him walking on stage. But in place, and then I am in an undisclosed shed in Galway City with this guy beside me. So in place of a Niall, I have a Neil. And musician, songwriter, Neil O'Connor is joining us on the podcast for the second time, Neil.
Hi, good to be here again, in a shed.
It's a shed, it's about, 11 o'clock at night, something like that?
It is.
We're huddled around
in bed. It's cold.
It is kind of cold.
If you hear some whirring sound, that's a heater.
It's a halogen heater.
It's a helicopter heater.
So we're at the end of a long day of recording because I was telling the people at work that I'm on an artistic holiday. So I had a gig last night. I was doing stand up at the Jew Drop In last night, and tonight, or all of today and tonight, we were recording tracks for Neil's upcoming album to be finished next month or two.
Hopefully, 2 months, fingers crossed.
This is the second, because we, in the previous incarnation of this podcast, we had you on when you made Loose Ends, which was the first album.
Yeah, and that was in a shed as well. We did the recording.
that too was in a shed late at night.
It was warmer than this one. How many years ago is that now?
It's about, is it 3 years ago or is it longer?
No, it's longer. My first boy was born, and it's like over 4 years ago.
Oh God, is it? Man, time is flying.
You've been to America, you've been back.
We've had like crazy lives since then. I've been to the States, you've had kids.
I know.
It's bananas.
New houses and stuff. But it's been an adventure, and here we are back in a shed.
But this is like, the more things change, the more they stay the same, don't you? It's like, wouldn't life be dull if we didn't get together every now and again and make music?
But I saw you today for the first time in 3 years, and it was just like I kind of saw you yesterday. There was no difference to it. It was weird.
It's unreal. Yeah, yesterday I met up with a couple of guys, Kenny Gaughan and Liam Doherty, that I haven't seen in forever. And it was exactly the same. It was like, I met Kenny, we went for a walk. Like, I bumped into him outside the Jew Drop In.
Yeah.
First time I'd seen him in about 3 years. And we just went over to the Spanish Arch and drank a can and talked about comedy. And it was like, it was literally like we said to each other, it's like no time has passed at all.
It could be 20 years. It could be like 2 years, 2 months. It seems to be the same kind of thing.
Yeah, it's great though.
Except you've gotten 20 years older.
Well, I look 20 years older since the last time I saw you.
You actually look the same as the first time I met you. The hair is back.
I've grown my hair again. We were both musicians in Galway. You still are a musician in Galway, but we were both musicians in Galway. I was living in a flat, and I remember being in bed early one Sunday morning. It was maybe 6 a.m. and there was someone downstairs. My flatmate had arrived back with a load of people.
There was a noise.
There was a commotion downstairs. There was someone in the sitting room with a guitar singing "The Drugs Don't Work," and I was like, what is going
Who's
on down there?
Murdering that song down there.
And I went down and it was like, oh, I know you. You work in HMV.
I can't believe you got out of bed for that. Then stayed up for probably 10 hours after
that. Well, you and I went to the pub then, as I recall. As soon as they were open, anyway. Yeah. Like, you know. I mean, it was easy for me because I'd just been asleep, but you were, by the end of that session that day, you were
just pretty tired by 5 or 6.
You were pretty fit for bed at that point, as I recall.
It was a long time up, but it was good crack. I remember we're in Nocton's. This is early in the day, like, and we're like whacking away in the acoustics. No one seemed to bother us. He just left us to it.
Yeah, but that's Galway though. Yeah. Like, that's like the people who live in Galway don't realize that doesn't happen really anywhere else. Yeah. Like, you know, it doesn't happen in Dundalk where I live, like where I'm from. It's unheard of in America for someone just to start a fucking song session in a pub.
Arrested for kind of like this disorder at like 12 o'clock in the day.
It's true though, like it's this kind of thing where they're like, they almost want you to drink your drink and get out in the pubs in America. It's a different animal altogether, like, you know, that tradition of,
don't let the crack get out of hand. Keep your level. It's the same in like pubs in Galway, like they let people in, I see it, let them in. have a drink, have more drink, have more drink. No, now you've had too much drink. You've given us like 100 euros, but now you're gone.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's no kind of...
That happened to me in Temple Bar, where I was drinking with a friend of mine. It was kind of sort of early in the afternoon, I suppose. But as soon as the after work customers started coming in, the people from the office, we were just told we weren't being served anymore.
Yeah.
And told to get out.
We don't need you anymore. We've got a new crowd.
Yeah, a crowd with money. Like, yeah. You know, these people are going to get shit-faced in here. Yeah. Like, you know.
And you're getting too shit-faced too early. We're going to replace you people with more money. We're going to knock a few hours out of them and give them the good seats.
True. Like, yeah. It's
you're so disposable in a pub.
How did we get onto that? Oh, yeah, yeah.
But we weren't disposable in Nocton's. They appreciated
us. No, it was great. And people sort of sat around us, and we were singing Bob Dylan songs or whatever, like, you know, and people should have been at mass, really, like, you know.
I remember, like, at the end, I think we went to another one or two pubs after that, but I just remember... been sitting at the back of St. Nicholas's Church by where the market kind of is, but the market wasn't there that day, and the sun was kind of flaking down. I was sitting on the ground with the guitar going, I think it's time to go home now.
I remember that.
We were practically busking for no money.
Do you know what the man is? I remember you singing my drug buddy. You were sitting out on the street just where this place you described, and you were singing that Lemonhead song, Drug Buddy, and then you hit the last chord and you just went, I have to go home. But that's funny enough.
Nice song to finish the day with.
Yeah, but you, am I right in thinking you, Evan Dando from the Lemonheads, you hung out with him one night?
Yeah, it was a crazy night that he played in Cuba. And I'd seen him a couple of years before in Roshi Dove, and it was like an amazing gig, and it blew my mind. And then he was playing in Cuba. It was this when he used to come to Galway the odd time, and we were there with like a few guys from work. Then at the end of the gig, I was like, that was amazing. Kind of had a couple of drinks and whatever. I went up, went snuck backstage, like we're literally backstage in Cuba. It was a curtain that you pull across. And there he was, sitting on his own, rolling a joint or something. And I was like, okay, good gig. And he's like,
hey, Evan.
Hey, man, how's things? And like, we just started getting talking. Straight away, there was some kind of click. He seemed like he was on his own there. Like, obviously, he was a manager with him, stuff like that. And said, do you want to come out and join us and have a laugh? And, you know, we hung out, kind of swapped around some things. And, like, it kind of resulted, like, an hour or two later that the house band went on in Cuba. And we're happy at this stage. And I was like, do you want to go up and do a song? He goes, yeah, no bother. So I went up to the band and I went, do you mind if me and Evan Dando go up and do a song? And they were like, yeah, sure, sure. So we went up and we tried to do You Can't Always Get What You Want by the Stones. And we were playing okay, but we thought the drummer would come in on the bass player, because it's only two chords, like three chords.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were like, no, they just didn't really seem to get it. But after that, then we went to...
What a wasted opportunity for them. It was. Jam with fucking Evan Dando, like...
And it kills me that we weren't in the time of camera phones and stuff, like, our videos, so there's, like, no footage of this at all.
Yeah, it's the worst, yeah.
It's only the people that were with me on the night.
That makes it kind of cooler, though.
It does, I suppose. Then we went back to a friend's house. Or not a friend's house, just kind of a stranger's house, but all my friends were there. And we sang songs for hours. Then it was like everyone was like falling asleep on the ground. So for that, me and him were still awake. And then we got like left the place. And I was like, are you tired yet? And he goes, no, I'm all right. And it was like 6 in the morning. So we got a taxi all the way out to my parents' house in Akakara. It's like 6 in the morning. And then we're in there and we're like smoking fags. And I was playing Neil Young on the beach. And I was playing him some of my own stuff. And it was great. Like I had a cup of tea. And then all of a sudden like it was like, what's that smell of smoke? Because I forgot that I was at home at my parents' house. So, like, the smell of, like, fags was drifted up to their bedroom at 8 o'clock in the morning. Oh, they woke up. My mother was like, what's that?
There's
like,
a lemon head in the house.
Yeah. That's what's like. I was looking up at the top of the stairs, and my mom was there roaring at me. And Evan Dando was, like, in this room. And I was like, but, Mom, it's Evan Dando. And she's like, I don't give a fuck who it is. No smoking in the house. Do you know who he was? So I was like, Evan, you gotta go. I'm sorry, it's like 7:30 in the morning, people gotta go to work. You gotta go. I think I worked the next morning as well. So he's just laughing, kind of bundled out the door, big hug. I think I could give him a lend of a tenner for a taxi, no cash on him. And Jesus. That was it. It was like, he was gone, and he gave me his address in New York, and I still have it, like, at home. And that was it. And he was gone.
Probably doesn't live there now, I'm sure.
Yeah. But it was class. It was like about 12 hours or whatever, just hanging out and just I'd been been kind of best buddies at the time and stuff like that. But yeah, it was mad.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's like, it's that time, you know, that Father Ted thing where you get reality and dreams and the rabbits and the head and stuff mixing. That was that moment.
Is that like, you know, for Evandando was a pretty big deal for a lot of people, like myself included, like, you know, like, and I know he is, he's a bit of a fuck up as well. Yeah. Like, you know, he lives in some kind of commune now, like an artist's commune. I read an interview, he was interviewed in Q or something, like not that long ago, maybe like 2 or 3 months ago. And he's living on some kind of weird commune.
He's got the big beard going on everything now.
Does he have, like, a big beard now?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of... Well, obviously, he's kind of... He must be near 50 now. He must be 50, I'd say. But he's got the kind of grey... The grey hairs coming through and stuff like that. No more than the rest of us. But he seems to be, like, just doing the same kind of stuff and kind of...
What was the last thing he put out? Was it the Covers album?
Yeah, which is actually pretty good.
I am beautiful, yeah. No matter what they say.
But he had all these obscure kind of covers on it, that stuff I never heard. Stuff by, like, not like Charles Manson, but some other kind of crazy guy like that. And songs were, like, really funny and great, but he picked some of these songs, and I think somebody else picked some of them for him.
Serial killer songs.
Yeah.
But sure, didn't Guns N' Roses try to do a Marilyn Manson, or not a Marilyn Manson, Marilyn... Charles Manson song.
Yeah, yeah, sorry, yeah. You got Game Girl or something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah. And Marilyn Manson did one as well, My Monkey, which was a Charles Manson poem or something like.
And actually, after watching a Charles Manson documentary or something, I went on YouTube and played one of his originals singing. I was going, he's actually got a really good voice. It's like, if he wasn't such a lunatic, he might have been accepted as a bit of a singer.
Neil Young tried to get him a record deal.
Yeah.
He got him into, like, the office at, like, whatever it was, Asylum Records, whatever his label was at the time, and he played a song for the label head. It might have been David Geffen, I think.
Could have been,
and it was a thing where they were just like, no, get this guy out of here, you know. Probably had, like, 3 women with him, like, you know.
But he actually could. When you hear those YouTube recordings, whatever, they sound actually, like, nice, and the songs aren't that bad either, but...
Apparently he couldn't...
Craziness, like, took over.
Well, yeah, there's that. But apparently also he couldn't really... he couldn't rein himself in to, like, sing a song the same way 2 times in a row kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he wasn't, like, a performer per se. He was just, like, a...
Had
you
to
know,
be original each time, an artiste.
Yeah, like, for better or worse, he was just this, like, super charismatic guy, magnetic guy who could kind of string words together, like, but... He just wasn't like, it's not like they were going to be able to book him a tour and send him out on a bus. Like, you know, it was never going to happen.
No, it was just like, but it was his dream. It was like, if he got this record deal and stuff like that, it would have been, maybe those murders wouldn't have happened, you know.
Yeah,
that was, he had so much anger, like, and he had a lot of problems, but even before this, but in his brain, this was the solution. Like, I'm going to be a famous singer, like Bob Dylan, like the Beatles, Helter Skelter, all that. But when it didn't start working out, he got extra angry, and that's when he kind of ordered his brainwashed people to go murdering these other kind of innocents.
If he hadn't
been
around now, he could have just gone on, like, America's Got Talent or whatever. Can you imagine?
Could have done it on YouTube.
On next, Charles Manson. So, Charles, you know, Simon Cowell.
Who are you going to be today, Charles?
Boring.
John Lennon.
So, but unlike Charles Manson, Neil, you seem to have gotten it together to get a few songs together. And how does something like this work for you? Because you are a family man. You've got a wife and kids, full-time job.
Thank God.
You've moved house recently enough.
Yeah.
Not super recently, but since I last saw you, you moved house.
Yeah.
And where does one find the time to record music in the midst of all that?
One didn't for about 2 years. There was nothing recorded. Nothing was done. But the last maybe 4 or 5 months, I just kind of got back into it again. I seem to have time. But the only time is that I get home maybe an hour or two earlier from work than when the rest of them come in. So I've got a window there of like an hour or two sometimes where I can do a little bit of recording. And that's that. It's those 2 hours adding up that are kind of adding bits to the songs every
yeah.
day kind of thing. And they got to a point like today when you come down and like most things are done and it's just we need more kind of singing on it just to make it sound even better. And yeah, it's been a good few months. It's been a lot of hours I put into it and every spare kind of minute that's been available has been doing this really, you know, and
Well, I mean, you've been sending me demos since the start. Was it? Did you say I get something off you before Christmas? I feel like I did, maybe.
Probably, yeah.
You've been sending me demos for a while, like, you know, and every time they would arrive, they'd be more fleshed out. Like,
I think I was sending you demos that weren't a part of this project before, maybe even before that. But then when I said to you, like, I'm going to do these kind of older songs, and then they just kept coming every few weeks, like, different version of the song and stuff like that. But
funny enough, one of the other ones you sent me of the original batch you were doing, wasn't there one song that was kind of about the Evan Dando night?
Yeah. That might be on something else later on. But yeah, that's another one that needs kind of work. Yeah, that could have been on the supposed second album. I'm calling this album the prequel album, because it's all older songs. It's
into George Lucas now.
It is, yeah. It confuses people.
Phantom Menace.
Oh, but why is it a prequel when this is like now and that was then? Because it is. Because all these songs, I was saying to you, they're 15, 20 years old. There's no song that's like been written in the last 8, 9 years, I'd say. They're all at least 10 years old. And that was the thing about them. To now that I have the chance to record them, and these were the ones that were kind of interesting to me still, just let's give it a go, and they're turning out pretty okay, I think, anyway.
Yeah, it was cool, really interesting for me today that we kind of got a whole day where we could just have a run at it and like literally like piece by piece, like line by line in some cases, like just put these vocals together and just
torturous line by line.
When you're not a full time artist, you have to do it like that. You have to do a little bit at a time. Like,
you have to put in a good day's graft to kind of get it to sound okay.
Yeah,
and it's not as if we were like picking on like one song all day. We've done like what, 5 or 6 songs now.
Yeah,
and it's, you know, it's been, and you've heard like the demos, but you haven't had the time to concentrate on them and get to learn bits off.
No, not like in the old days when I was music full time, I would spend a week like learning these tunes. Like, but I don't think, like, I was that uncomfortable on the bus coming down here. I don't think I even listened to them on the bus because it was so like, I got on the CityLink and there was the woman beside me was reaching across me to plug in her phone and all this kind of stuff. But there was no socket there, and she wouldn't believe me when I told her there was no socket there.
She kept reaching.
Yeah, no, and so we had the seat behind us had a socket in it, so we plugged it there, and her phone was sitting like by me because I was at the window, like beside my leg the whole way up from. I forgot how uncomfortable that fucking CityLink could be when it was packed. Like, you know,
and the money, is it like 2 hours or what is it?
It's 2.5 hours, maybe a little bit longer, even, because it went from the airport to the city.
Most important question: was there a toilet on the bus?
There was. I didn't need it, but I think there was one there. Yeah.
I can't. Like, it's my pet hate, like, no bathroom been available when you need to go, especially if you're going to a gig. I went to a gig last year, and we're on a bus, and we're drinking on the bus, and there was no toilet on the bus. I was going, are you crazy? They do, you know, they do a pit stop, like an Athlone or something halfway through.
Yeah.
But if you're drinking, that's fine, you do that. But then you've got to, by the time you get to Dublin, you want to just jump through the window.
Yeah.
So anymore, it's like, is there a toilet on the bus before I get on this bus?
What gig was it?
It was Coldplay. I went up for Emer.
Amazing. Were they good? Yeah.
Unbelievable. The light show alone, what they do, everyone's got a wristband and it's kind of in sync with whatever this music is. It was unbelievable spectacle. And I went to U2, was it 3 weeks, 4 weeks later? That was amazing as well, but in a different way. But they, you know, U2 are known for the shows, but they actually couldn't beat Coldplay for the light show and what they can put on.
Really, yeah.
Yeah, they're just, Coldplay are like, they're as big a stadium band now as U2. But U2 had the songs. They had just the depth and the kind of feeling more. So that kind of made it a better gig in that way.
Yeah,
I
get it.
It's weird to kind of, if I to, who said which gig was better, I'd have to toss a coin and go, I don't know.
I've never been, whatever Coldplay's selling, I've never been interested in buying it.
Like, I feel guilty about it, just kind of saying it. I kind of go, I'm gonna lose a few people here because of the Coldplay kind of thing, but it was, if you weren't even a Coldplay fan, you couldn't help but be blown away by the show and the the spectacle of it.
It's even the name annoys me. Why are they called Coldplay? Like,
what's play and why is it cold?
Why is it? Yeah, I remember seeing years ago, TV3 had a kind of a music panel show when I was at college. I can't even remember what it was called. Some fucking dickhead with wavy blonde hair presented it. I can't really remember his name. And they showed the video for Yellow, you know, where Chris Martin's on the beach
yeah.
and it's raining or whatever. Then by the end of the song, it's not, or is it the other way around? I can't remember. I remember just watching it thinking, we'll never hear from these guys again. What is this? Like, yeah. Shows what I know, like, you know.
But like, what a great video. It was so cheap. Like, it was caught one shot. It was like,
yeah, yeah.
Okay, you're going to go down. It's going to be kind of raining. The sun is going to come up. And that's the video. And it seemed to work because by the end of it, there was a bit of yellow in his face, unless they did that with a computer.
I'm sure there was some kind of chickenry pokery.
The song was so kind of can't help you but catchy and stuff like that, that it was going to work anyway, no matter if there was a video of him standing on his head. The song was good enough.
Well, actually, more so if there was a video of him standing on his head, like, you know.
Then they pumped more money into the videos after that. What was that one, the scientist, where they kind of he walked backwards or something?
Oh, that is, I, you know what, I actually do
that
like that
song.
That is a
bit of a brain frizzler, that one. Yeah. It's really good.
And it's a good song. I actually had to learn it recently for a duo I'm getting together.
So you're getting on board with Coldplay.
That one song, yeah, but generally speaking, I'm not a, and honestly, I wouldn't have even listened to it only for I had to learn it, you know, that kind of way.
What about Fix You? That's a heartstring puller.
I don't know, I just...
Let me get out the piano and we'll play it. See how you think of it.
Fix You. Is there a Ryan Adams song called Fix You as well? Or is that Fix It?
Fixes it. Yeah. That's a good tune too. Not as good as Coldplay's, unfortunately. As much as I like
take
Ryan.
Take Ryan over Coldplay. Ryan over Chris any day of the week. As annoying as... Actually, the pair of them are pretty fucking annoying, but I'll still take Ryan.
Yeah. Ryan's more neurotic. Chris is more kind of normal.
Yeah, that's true. Ryan Adams is like... Ryan Adams is one of those guys that, like, you listen to an interview. Sometimes I'll listen to an interview with him and think, I'm going home to melt my Ryan Adams collection because I cannot support this fucking boob.
I'm going to turn it into something good, like a hammer.
Yeah.
Use the hammer then to beat my Ryan Adams records out of Ryan Adams.
And then you listen to it and you're like, God, that's really fucking good. Like, yeah. I don't know, like... I've never been so conflicted about an artist. Even Liam Gallagher, for all the shitty things that he said, they're usually funny. But Ryan Adams is like, he's like this upright baby in man's clothes, like, you know.
It's like, you kind of think, a lot of his songs are obviously about kind of love lost and breakups and stuff like that, but you kind of go, well, some of that your fault along the way, you know.
And
Glenn Hansard gets blamed for that as well, kind of going, oh, poor me, and this, that, the other. But you caused it, so it was your decision, probably. So you can't be heartbroken about it when you kind of let it behind. And but you have the license to use it for songs.
I know someone who worked in an unnamed recording studio in New York City, and Ryan Adams was recording there, and he was staying in an apartment near the studio, and her and a few of the other people, or him. And a few of the other people that worked there had to lug a pinball table up the stairs to this apartment for him to have there for the 5 days or something that he was staying there. He had to have a pinball machine.
He probably never played
there.
It. He just put his beer on it or something.
You should have seen... I've seen that last album, Prisoner. I've seen kind of... I wasn't there when he was recording it or anything, but I've kind of seen how it was done. I saw the little room at the top of the studio where he was like looking out over Greenwich Village where he could write his songs and then take it down to the studio. The man, he's a spoiled brat, like, you know, he's a bit like a sort of a musical Quentin Tarantino or something, like, you know, they're both just big fucking babies, like, you know.
And it's like they're allowed to be this kind of weird or neurotic or whatever word you want to put on it, like, but...
It's like a prolonged
childhood. Maybe these kind of guys that are so good at writing songs and like that, they need to be like that, or else if they were kind of more normal and stuff like that, we wouldn't have those songs. Do you know, there is a kind of balance to it. Any kind of rock star or whatever, without the rock star thing, but they seem to be a bit weird anyway from the offset, like that.
Yeah.
They're pulling these songs out of somewhere. We're all trying to tap into it, but they seem to be have the main line to it.
It's like, I think, to write and put out the amount of stuff they're putting out, maybe you do need to be a little bit cracked.
Yeah.
And I used to want to be a little bit cracked to be that good, but now that I've got like a life I enjoy and I don't feel under pressure to do that kind of thing, I think I'm kind of happier with my own place in the artistic world. Like, you know,
it's all about security. It's like if you kind of, but I think for me, it's always been about security since I was like 12, 13, 14, whatever like that. I was always looking for love, for security, for, you know, summer to kind of where I can just sit down, play my music, listen to my music, have my friends there, that's it. And but it takes so long to get there.
Yeah.
It takes you fucking 20, by the time
you get there, you never see your
friends.
Like,
yeah, that's it. You like the things you want, the things I wanted when I was younger are pretty much the same now, but you have to go through the hell of teenage life and dodge getting fucking killed by somebody walking down the street or something like that. And, you know, go through, you know, falling in love, breaking up, or you thought you were in love and then you weren't. At the, you know, it was just the next one. But it's all a part of growing up, I suppose. And, you know, it's going to be the same thing for kids today. But
it's true, yeah. And
we gave it a go.
Did our best.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, I it is a thing where I kind of would much rather have some kind of semblance of like a normal life and not live like a maniac and be just sort of all right at that stuff. Like, you know what, you know, rather than being like, I used to love shit like Woody Allen films, and now you realize, or, you know, allegedly what the kind of human being he is like. And you're like, well, maybe.
I used to like The Cosby Show.
Oh yeah, yeah.
That's all gone to pot.
And it's one of those things where you're like, well, maybe that level of attention and fucking, you know,
is it needed?
And leeway just is not good for a person, like, you know. So maybe this is like the way forward, is people like you and I who in the spare moments in between work and life and family and all that stuff, you find these little snatches of time to do your thing, like, you know.
And I've always thought, again, since I was a kid, that like that, I don't know why it bothered me, but it was kind of going, since I heard music and I was going, God, those guys have played those songs, and it's like, that's always going to be there. And, you know, I'm putting that on. I don't even know what year that's from, but it sounds great to me, and it's always going to be something that people listen to. So then when I kind of was okay at the guitar and stuff, and I went, I'd love to do something like that when I'm gone. I know I was thinking like this when I was so young, but when I'm gone, it's gonna.
Thinking of your legacy, like,
even if it's total rubbish, but there's gonna be something there left. And now that we have the internet, it's gonna be on the internet somewhere. Someone's gonna find it, and they might get something out of it, or they mightn't. But at least I know. It's like leaving photographs or paintings for that. A lot of people go through life, they don't leave anything. They just leave their clothes and their junk.
A
lot
of boxes to be cleared out. Now, to be fair, you're gonna have that too.
Of course, I'm gonna have more so than songs, but at least you've kind of made an effort to leave something that is trying to explain your version of life or things you've seen or been through or stuff like that. And, you know, I think if people that aren't been creative and artistic, and they're not really encouraged in schools, they're missing like a huge part of your brain hasn't been used, you know. And you can't just go to school, go to college, do really well, get a great job, do that job really well, get a pension and die. Surely there has to be other things besides the money aspect of it along the way, and just going on holidays, like sitting in the sun, baking. A lot of people don't have that. They don't have any kind of creative outlet. And fair enough, if you can't play the guitar, if you can't sing, but maybe you're good at like throwing stones through windows. Just do that. You know, something you're good at.
The Hendrix of throwing stones through people's windows. But I do kind of think that when you, like, people, when you say things like that, and you say, like, you know, creativity is such a big part of life, I think when people hear you say something like that, they think, oh, he's saying we should all be sitting around Nocton's or whatever, like, with a beret on, writing poetry. And it's not, it's even just, like, how you approach your life. Like, your creativity might be that you fucking, you know, every night you make your own dinner. And you really think about what you're doing, and you put your own.
And you're
probably
a good cook compared to me. That's a massive thing.
Anything like that, it might just be like, it might be how you decorate your house. Like, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be Charles Dickens or something.
You don't
have to
go be painting and stuff like that. And everyone's good at something. And sometimes people don't find anything they're good at. But that's just because they haven't found it yet.
Yeah.
And they kind of give up on life before that happens. But everyone's like good at something. And if you're not, you're going to work on it a little bit and stuff like that. But
or even your whole trip might be that you can encourage it in other people, like, you know. Like, it's just like, that doesn't necessarily mean yet that everybody should be, you know, at fucking painting forests with the easel out every Saturday afternoon or whatever, like, you know.
But some people, like, it could be a small thing, like, this guy's in bands, we'll say, that are, like, just the bass player or just the drummer. But they're, like, amazing bass players or amazing drummers, but they're not kind of getting the recognition they deserve because they're just holding time or keeping the beat.
Yeah,
these guys
yeah.
are, like, amazing musicians on their own, but it's always kind of seems to be the singer or the songwriter kind of that seems to get
the because it's
the
obvious thing. Like, it's... I always kind of feel bad for... Well, not feel bad, but, you know, like, actors.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like an actor, you might be the greatest actor in the world, but you need someone to write a script, and you need someone else to hire a camera, and you
yeah,
need
exactly.
someone else to say action and shine a light at you. Like, and you, like, the great thing about something like music is that as long as you've got a guitar, or even just something you can bang on and sing, like, you know, you've got what you need to do
yeah.
to make your music.
You don't need the whole operation. Like,
no, no.
It, yeah. And it's like the person that... that writes the script and stuff, that script isn't worth anything. It'll stay under their bed forever unless an actor acts it out or
yeah.
somebody chooses to run with it.
Like, no one's going to sit down and read a script like they would a novel or anything like
that. Yeah,
yeah. Like, that's why, like, and drummers are kind of the same. If you're a great drummer, you need the band. Like, you can't just
yeah.
drum on your own. Like, no one's going to listen to you. Like, unless you're, like, insane good on
yeah.
percussion or whatever. Like, you know.
That's what, like, any bass players I met through life, they were kind of going, yeah, I mean, I like playing the bass, but it's not really much good at home because you're just there on your own going, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
You're, like, going, so they need that. Even if they probably end up in bands a lot of times, but they hate the music.
They
hate everything, but they just like to play with a drummer and they like to play with a singer.
Every
like.
Bass player or drummer I think I've ever known, like, is usually in a band that doesn't necessarily fulfill them artistically.
Yeah.
And they might be in a band like that, but they play maybe once every 6 months or something,
yeah.
like, you know, and generally speaking, they're in pubs going fucking drumming along with some prick doing Sweet Caroline or whatever,
yeah.
like, you know.
But they like that they can play the bass with some friends and stuff like that. We're going to do an ad break.
Okay.
I'll be back in one sec.
We're going to take a quick commercial break while Neil has a leak, and we're going to play one of his tunes.
So the gig was kind of great, and it wasn't very late. Something made me go and say hello. You were sitting on your own, I knew there were some things we could share. Well, the house band started their show while we were talking about the Stones. I asked them, could we get up for a song? You know they weren't very good, so we the best we could. Drank some more, I fell off of the stage. There goes him, standing on his head, falling down, rolling around the floor.
Okay, so that was a clip of one of Neil's tunes, to be decided at a later date when I get it back to the house to edit it. Would you mind if I threw in a bit of the song about Evan Dando, even though it's not officially...
Yeah.
Would that be alright
yeah.
with you?
Just throw in the good part of it, not the end, which I don't like.
What way does it end?
There's like an ending where it doesn't end right. It's like it ends on the wrong chord or something.
Okay.
So, but most of it sounds okay, I think.
I'll throw in a clip of early in the song then, just to keep you happy. So that song we just heard is off a different project altogether. Then that's down the pike, probably another.
That was meant to be the second album, and that took a couple of years to kind of just to have the time to record it. But I've all these songs and they're just there to do. But I kind of hit a wall. Like I'd say it was like three quarters of the way through, and I was like. I can't go on with this. Like I needed some help technically to fix a few things and stuff like that, and I just couldn't get my head around getting someone to do it. So this kind of idea just came out of nowhere, so I'm going to record these old songs. And then I really got into that and it just took off, and that's why I've been going with this for the last few months. So I'd say the third album, which should have been the second album, will come out like maybe within a year after the other one. There won't be a big wait, and then I can kind of just leave all that behind and just kind of start new stuff again.
Cool.
I think as I go on, it'll be two roads. It'll always be new stuff and then revisit an old stuff.
You've got a pretty big backlog, like, you know, because I've rehearsed with you in various guises down through the years, and there's like I know there's songs that aren't on this album or the previous one or the proposed third album that are as good as any of these, like, you know, so there's like a ton of tunes like knocking around, you know.
There's loads, and there's loads that you wouldn't have heard, and there's loads that I've forgotten, and maybe it's like there's a load of rubbish there too. But
there has to be, like, that's what people don't realise.
If there's even 2% of that is worth going on with, that's a good odds, like, you know?
Yeah,
because that could be 40 songs in the amount that
it's true. Yeah, but that's just like you just kind of have to keep chipping away at it, like, you know, and it's not like. People's idea of what success is and isn't is very strange. I think it's changing now because, like, there's no real rock stars per se anymore. Like, you know, like, I think who's left? Like, maybe the Arctic.
There's no new rock stars.
Jack White. Like, I can't think of who the last one was.
Who's the last kind of rock star that's come out of, like, nothing in the last few years? Like, when did Arctic Monkeys start? Does that.
That's
10 years ago.
Oh yeah, it might even be more. Like it's a good while. Like people.
Are they
think,
even rock stars?
Well,
I know Alex Turner likes to think he is, but he's got this kind of facade. But that's more. He wasn't like that when he started off.
He was just a skinny lad with big ears.
Liam Gallagher's always been the same. Noel Gallagher's always been the same. They've obviously got money now. There's been a few changes in experience, but you know, Alex Turner seems to be a bit of an act. To kind of cope with being a rock star, being famous.
Yeah, but yeah, maybe.
The Gallers are, they're the real thing. Love Jack White. He's just weird.
Yeah. We were talking about this earlier on. Like, I just, like, Jack White has an album out at the moment, and as much as I love him, I just kind of, he's this, like, lunatic, that millionaire that lives out in, is he in Nashville, or... He's got his own, like...
Space.
Lives on the moon, like, with a big turntable, like, you know. His house is literally opens up, like, a lid on a record player, and he gets into it, like, you know.
Made of cheese.
Yeah. But it's, like, he's just, like, this... As much as I love his stuff, I'm just, like, who is... Like, I can't relate to him, like, you know. He's this crazy bastard, like, you know.
But I love, like, that he's... Like, he did the Dead Weather, and what was the other band he did?
The Rock on Tours.
They were class, like, they're great albums. Like, those first two albums were, like, amazing. It's like, he didn't, I suppose the White Stripes was gone at this stage, so now he's, like, Jack White solo act. But it's always kind of similar, but the Dead Weather was, like, the amazing kind of riffs.
And he was the drummer in that band.
Yeah, well, he played guitar as well, and he was, like,
did he?
I think he was only, like, the studio drummer. But I think when they went out live, they had some other... You know,
but he was also singing. He was playing. Like, there is footage of him on Jules Holland drumming in the Dead Weather, but he's singing as well. Yeah. Like, you know, he's too big a personality to be contained to the
he's
drums.
He's a tall guy too, isn't he?
Yeah, he's huge. He's like he could mess you up.
He's like the kind of the jolly green giant out of the Corn and the Cob.
Yeah.
He's that tough.
As much as I like him, though, I find it like he's difficult to relate to because I don't know what his day-to-day life is like.
Yeah.
He presses his own... Like, he can literally record something in the morning and have a cover and have it pressed on vinyl by the end of the day, like, you know.
We're just jealous that we can't do that ourselves.
Yeah, I know.
But remember that kind of... this guitar-y video where it was like himself, Jimmy Page, and The Edge.
Yeah.
They're all kind of a weird setup and a weird thing. But they were showing like bits of their lives, and his life was like, where he lives. This is where the weirdness kind of comes from. And then he got some kind of young lad with him, like maybe about like 10 or 11.
Dressed the same as him.
And making a guitar, or doing something with the guitar. And like,
that's, the thing, like when it,
that's his perception that he wants everyone to think about, but that was like really weird. So that's embedded in our brains.
But did you see the thing a few years ago where I guess he's got a house somewhere in Nashville that he's not at very much because he's on tour, and every year on his street they have like a street party during the summer.
Yeah.
And he showed up a couple of years ago at the street party, but no one knew he was famous. Like they were just like, do you live down the street? He's like, yeah, well, I'm away for work a lot and I don't ever get to come to the street party. And it just so happened that a few of the neighbors took pictures and shared them on Facebook of the street party. And as they got circulated a little bit, people were like, is that Jack White at the street party, like eating hot dogs and just hanging out with all these old people?
Was he wearing
like,
his bowler hat?
Yeah, he probably was, like, you know. But he's just like... There is an element of sort of down-to-earthedness about him, you know, but...
I like the way that he doesn't have much time for the fame side of it or the celebrity thing. He's basically a guy you can imagine he would live without electricity only for he needs it to plug in his guitar.
Yeah.
He's that kind of removed.
Read by gas lamp.
Yeah, he's that removed from everything.
The thing I liked about that, he was in a band, like when he was in his early 20s or something, called the Upholsterers. Because he literally worked as an upholsterer with him and another older guy. At the end of the day, like, let's say they were in a shed kind of like this.
Yeah.
They would push all the upholstery stuff to one side of the shed and set up a drum kit and a guitar and they'd jam. And they made a 45.
Yeah.
And they hid it in furniture that they sold. So it was like stuck in under the bottom of a chair. So there's something like 20 of these 45s. A few of them have been found.
Wow.
That are stuck under chairs somewhere in Detroit. Like, you know, whoever
imagine
bought...
Imagine thinking about that when you were like 20 and you'd know nobody cared about your music. No, and your music could have been just rubbish. Anyone would have cared about it. But to do that, that's
I think you can hear the song on YouTube because someone found one of the chairs that had the fucking 45 stuck to like... The cover of it stapled underneath the bottom of the chair, like
it must have cost a lot less to make a 45 a few years ago. Because now it'd be like it'd be a few hundred quid to make a few 45s.
Make these 45s and no one's going to hear.
500 quid, please.
Maybe they just put a few of them in the chairs. Maybe they pressed up like 120 of them. They stuck in the chairs.
That would
like,
cost.
You know.
I like the way though that it was upholstery and couches. That so if when they were playing, it would have been a very kind of soundproof, kind of dudded kind of room with all these couches around.
And it would have been big as well, like, you know, there might have been fumes from the glue or whatever, like, you know, but I'm sure that just helped the music. But,
Jack.
But I like him, yeah, all his solo, like he said, I haven't listened to the new one yet, but the first two solo albums I thought were, that Lazaretto I thought was just brilliant.
Yeah, I've never heard it, like, properly, although true, but.
Even just that song, dong, 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 it's fucking brilliant.
See, that's it. He goes to bands, like as you said, he went through those other bands and the White Stripes. It doesn't matter what the name of the band is or whether it be him solo. It's all the tread of him going right through it. Like, those White Stripes songs could have been called Dead Weather if that was the name of the band at the time. He's come up with that main bit that's kind of keeping it going. And sometimes he comes up with these great kind of riffs like on a solo album and stuff like that. But people, they're always like afraid to take on the solo artist as opposed to if they're White Stripes fans. And then you're a little bit older, you kind of go, oh no, I just like the White Stripes. I don't like Jack White now. He's a bit weird. But the music could be potentially better than the White Stripes record.
Some of his best stuff is on those two solo albums, which I'm now talking myself into listening to the recent one. You know, it's just one of those things where you just think, I don't know if I'm still on the same page with this guy or not, but I should probably listen to the actual album before I make that decision.
It all goes down to like the little bit older that you get that you want to stick with familiar things and you're kind of happy to kind of live in your memories and you want to go back and kind of go, well, I just love this White Stripes album. It reminds me of when I was like 17, 18. It's, you know, it's still great. It takes me back there somewhere in my head. I don't need this new stuff. I have to reinvest in this older memory.
Yeah.
Now it's like 2018. 2018 is shit compared to like 1998.
Yeah.
So why am I going to, I'm not going to, no matter what happens in life, no matter if this is the greatest album of all time, I'm not going to invest in that much because it's not going to mean as much to me as this did at the time, because your brain has changed and, you know, your life has changed. So,
in so many ways.
Yeah, so even an album that could be crap back in like 2001 means more to you now than a really good album in like 2017, because it's an artist that you liked at the time, and now that you don't understand a lot of the music that's going on these days. It's all about youth, as I say, like rock and roll is for the youth, or not even rock and roll, but music in general, because it's the most important time it is in your life is probably between 14 and 25 or something like that. And after that, it's like a memory of what you used to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I could be wrong, but I think to young people anyway, guitar music isn't necessarily that important. Like, to someone who's 14 now, like, you know.
It's not.
It's not the popular culture it used to be. Now it's more kind of TV shows and stuff now, like Netflix and YouTube and stuff, like, you know, it's not.
But why?
Maybe I sound like a desperately old man.
No, but why would it be when it's not on the radio? Like, if you're the only guitar you're hearing is Ed Sheeran's acoustic guitar over a song or someone like that.
How could you?
Not important. It's not. So, and because you're like you haven't heard really anything else except what your dad is playing or your brother or your sister. That's the only way that kids get into different kind of music, and if they're willing to invest in the past, like I'm thinking like that. The Beatles and the Stones to us, like, had well done their best stuff before we were born, and we loved them. They're our favorite bands. Maybe Nirvana and Pearl Jam and whatever will be, you know, other kids' things, even though they weren't born.
They kind of are. You do see it sometimes, like kids that are really into, like, the 90s seems to be kind of back in a way, like, you know, and like it might, but like, if I remember looking at, it was last year or maybe it was earlier this year, I was thinking, Jesus, like. Fucking Billy Corgan, Liam Gallagher, Noel Gallagher, Beck.
Mm.
There's a couple other people. They all have solo albums out this year. Like, you know, these like 90s icons, like, you know.
Yeah.
And I think even did No Doubt have something out. Like, all these people seem to be sort of back.
Yeah.
At the same time. Like, they'd pre-organized it almost, like, you know.
But they're never, a lot of these acts, whether it be solo or whatever, they're never going to have, they might try it solo for a while, but they have to come back to the kind of, the main thing that made them famous. And especially as they get older, you notice like they kind of go, the fear comes in going, well, this solo thing is never going to work. Only for Liam Gallagher, it's like BDI didn't work, so the next thing is me by myself, because Oasis isn't happening. And that has worked. Like he's been very lucky with that.
Yeah.
And he's been lucky because he's consciously decided with his manager, his girlfriend, we're going to be doing a shitload of Oasis songs.
Yeah.
We're going to have a full band and that's it. And maybe if one or two of the songs off the album are okay and catchy, that will catch the fire and then we'll get the gigs.
But
and
it is like, crazy. It's like the fucking, it's like the Manchester version of like Elvis at Las Vegas or something. Like, you know, it's like, he has to do something. Like, and he's as much right to sing those songs as Noel Gallagher does. Like, I know Noel Gallagher wrote them, but they wouldn't, none of us would know them only for the fact that Liam Gallagher sang them, like, you know.
And I saw him like last year, his solo gig in Dublin.
Liam?
And yeah, and it was unbelievable. Like, he took the stage and it was like, he didn't really care that, because the band were loud. It's like, you know, anyone could be an Oasis cover band doing the songs, and that's the way it was. And they were perfect, they were like dead on. And it was that voice. It was loud, and that voice, and all these kind of big songs kept coming, even songs that I was sick of years ago, like Some Might Say and stuff like that. But when you hear them live again, you're like, you're transported back to years ago, and it sounded amazing. But when Noel Gallagher does them, unfortunately, it's not Liam singing them, and he does kind of more washed down versions of them. But it's amazing.
I like when Noel does that stuff though, you know, because it's like I've seen Noel once.
Yeah.
I saw him in the States. Ryan Adams opened for him. And
What a gig.
Oh, it was unreal. And I just loved it. Like, but I like the versions he does of something. Like, I heard him on something on Spotify, the Spotify sessions or something.
Yeah.
Doing Go Let It Out. Yeah. With all these backing singers, like with these kind of funky backing singers, and he does it in a different key. And it's just like, it sounded great. And that song, when you listen to that song now, the original version of it, it sounds so tired and fucking boring, like, you know, but he totally gave that song like these new legs, like, yeah. You know, and
but that's what he's doing. He's individually picking the ones that he thinks that will work better for him. He wrote them all anyway, so it doesn't matter. But
yeah,
it's very hard for him to. And I've all, like, no matter what acoustic version of any song off the first three albums he does, is always going to be amazing. But when you're, say, at a gig and it's like packed house and everyone's drinking, once Liam Gallagher goes into like, all your dreams are made, and fucking the place erupts, or, you know, starts off a rock and roll star, it's just different than when Noel does it. He's just, that is why, I totally forgot why I liked Oasis. I was kind of going, well, he's just a singer, but he's not. He's that voice made them what they were.
Yeah, no.
In combination with Noel's like great songwriting.
But I like Noel's solo stuff, particularly the last two albums, as much as I liked the Oasis stuff when I was 14. I like that stuff as much now, that the newer stuff, as I did the old stuff when it came out. Like, you know, I think that album he did with David Holmes was brilliant. Like,
yeah.
I thought it was really good, and I just don't feel the same way about Liam's album. I'm just like, it's like particularly like, what's the kind of fucking Traveling Wilburys kind of song on it? What fucking tune is that? It sounds really like ELO.
I listened to about three times.
There's a song, what is it? For What It's Worth, you know.
Worth. The big ballad song.
Yeah. And there's like, I think I've said this before on this podcast, but there's a bit in it that annoys the absolute fuck out of me. There's a bit where it goes, the early bird catches the arrow, and the strings go na 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 na, and it's just like it sounds like it's just Jeff Lynne. It's just like rehashed. He's not even rehashing the Beatles anymore. He's rehashing ELO, rehashed already. Like, you know, it's like eating like fucking, you know, like fucking microwave leftovers. Like, it's just like,
I'd say like, Liam wouldn't know anything about ELO, so it's probably those producers just went, this looks good. So he went on the album, he just went, that sounds cool. So
yeah, because to him it just sounds Beatly, like, you know, some chin-stroking cunt in a studio
and
in
he's
LA.
Happy that,
like,
he goes,
you know,
that sounds like the Beatles, that's good, we'll go with that.
I don't really like it that much, I have to say. Like, and for him to, but he does this thing where he's like, I'm a rock and roll star, and you're like, but what does that mean? Like, unless people know who you are, that counts for nothing. Like, you know.
But it's weird, like, because he was quiet for, say, a couple of years. But when he came back and he started talking about that, and I don't agree with a lot of shit he says, but
don't agree with any of it. But he's very funny, though. Yeah. He is really funny.
Like, there's three.
That video
of him
making tea. I used to fucking someone to do this for me in the 90s.
Little guy, Noel.
Yeah, it's very funny.
But he's got like, he knows what he is, but he knows he's got on a good, as he says, you get me on a good day, no one's going to get past me. And it's true. On a bad day, he'll leave the stage because he can't sing.
Yeah, but, and it happens. It still happens. Like, he's left concerts in the last 6 months, like, you know.
But at least this time he's more apologetic about it. He's kind of going, oh, geez, I might actually lose these fans. Before it was like, I don't give a fuck about these fans.
That footage of them when they were about to get on the plane to go to America, and all of a sudden he's like, oh, I'm fucking homeless, I have to go back. Like, he waits until he's about to step on the plane and then decides, oh wait, no, I have to go and buy a house. Like, it's fucking ludicrous. Like,
my favourite clip ever of those days, and when he was in Australia and there was like a row on the plane with the pilot or something like that, and he's there in a beer garden or something outside, and he's like, top off, you know, he's doing it obviously with top off and smoking a fag and yellow fingers and kind of drunk, and he's like, and Australian, like, you know, the main networker up with a camera in his face going, what happened on the plane? He's like, you know, what are you doing? You might get barred from Australian Airlines. He's like, I'll tell you what, kids, I'd rather fucking walk.
I've seen that clip. Yeah, it's very funny.
And that
pilot fucking walk.
And that pilot's gonna get stabbed. It's like this. And his manager's like, cut it off, cut it off.
He likes. Have you ever seen the footage of Sacha Baron Cohen on Conan O'Brien or something like that, where he's talking about, because he did it, that film he did, is it called The Brothers Grimsby or whatever? And he based the whole character on Liam Gallagher. But apparently Liam Gallagher was at some awards thing that he was at, and Liam went up to him and said,
and this is,
I'm
before,
gonna fucking
this is way,
stab you.
Yeah, but no, this is way before this. This was like, from my heard of it, that Sacha Baron Cohen went up, I'm going to tell a joke now and you're going to be involved in it and stuff like this on the stage. And this is like years before this Brothers Grimm thing. So he went up on the stage and he didn't say the joke that he said to Liam. And then Liam was pissed off because he thought he was going to get a laugh out of it. And then he goes, I'm going to stab you. That was it.
But it's
so,
such a weird
so now
I'd
say he really wants to stab him after I film him. Proper stab him.
Jesus. And to be fair, Sacha Baron Cohen literally had the entire fucking deep south of America mad at him. I don't think Liam Gallagher's going to worry him too much.
He's got every enemy he needs.
I wish I liked that Liam Gallagher solo stuff more, but I don't like it. I like Noel's musical sensibilities, and yeah. I like his voice.
I love the adventure Noel, and that album I've heard it maybe twice, and it grows any little bit, but it's new to him, but it's not new to the world. It's kind of very kind of repetitive and stuff like that. But to him, it's opened up a whole thing. Oh God, you can actually do this with samples and things like that. But the songs behind it aren't amazing. There's about two or three that are good. and then I'll say the same about the Liam Gallagher album. When I listen to it, for all this bravado of Rock and Roll Star, it's a very low key album. It's most of the album is slow songs. I've heard
Take
that again about your friends.
Down, yeah. All the way to Chinatown.
There's about three songs maybe that are kind of rock and roll fast, but the rest are kind of very, there's not even much you could do live there.
No.
But then he goes oh, fucking fast rock and roll. I want this, that, and the other. But that's not what your album is. And I think the next one he wants to be faster, but.
But even the lyrics on it are there were these kind of lyrics that trick you into think they're saying something, and then you go, whoa, what's that about? And then you listen to it, you go, oh, it's about nothing. Yeah. It's just rhyming everyone's doing yoga or whatever. Yeah. And a friend of mine used to say about, the Patty Casey song, Sweet Suburban Sky? Do you know that song? Yeah. There was a line in that song, it's pretty meaningless fucking gibberish, but then at a certain point in that song, he says something maybe then they'll call it genocide. And
I know that, yeah.
And she was kind of saying that, it's as if he put that line in there to make the rest of the song be like, oh no, it was really serious shit. Maybe then they'll call it genocide, even though it's meaningless. Absolute nonsense.
But the thing is, I never thought about it that deeply, because I never really...
It wakes you up, that line, well, genocide, where? Yeah.
But this goes back when we were talking about today, when... Years ago, when I worked at a record shop, it was the only music that we played seemed to be Irish artists. So it was Paddy Casey, it was Mundy, it was The Frames, it was fucking The Stunning, it was Damien Rice,
The Stunning,
Damien Dempsey.
The Stunning's the best. Out of all that stuff you just mentioned, The Stunning is easily the best music.
Their first album is class.
Brilliant.
But the thing is that these guys they were this kind of Paddy Casey stuff. It was really, the songs were great. They still are kind of great. And it didn't really matter about what the lyrics were, because the sentiment in his voice, he could have been singing about got a bag of chips under a sweet sort of, but it just sounded really kind of nice at the time. And it seemed to fit the kind of, when was that, late, early 2000s probably, mid 2000s?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I know, that was, when I moved here, that was in big swing, and I moved here in 2003.
And I met a few just by weird coincidence. I was in Cuba, that nightclub in Galway, a few times, and I met Paddy Casey once up there, and he sat down beside me. We're talking for ages, and getting on well. Then like a few months later, he was there beside me again. We're like, hey, Neil, how's it going? I couldn't believe he was literally about that high.
Yeah.
He's and that means 4 foot.
Yeah, yeah, for the audience.
Yeah, yeah, but he was really small, and he was like, so was there any girls around? I went, loads, they're all over here. I'm not the bridge for you to get them.
Yeah, I'm not a
pimp. It will not be me.
That reminds me of this is one of my favourite lines in Frasier. Are you a Frasier fan?
No, I have to say no.
I love Frasier.
I'm good with Curb and Seinfeld, but
I love Seinfeld.
And Cheers even, but
yeah,
Frasier
I
has to stop.
There's a scene in Frasier where there's a woman comes home with Frasier. I think she's an ex policewoman or something like that, and she comes into the house with Frasier, but she gets on really well with the dad, and when she leaves, the dad asks Frasier for her phone number, And Fraser's like, but she was with me. And then Martin, the dad, goes, well, I thought you brought her here for me. And then Fraser just goes, since when do I bring you women? It was the way he said it. It's one of the funniest things I've ever seen. Like, since when do I bring you women?
He's no pimp.
No. But that's like, that's the, you were talking earlier about the stuff, going back to the stuff, you know, I've been like obsessively watching Seinfeld now for the last couple of weeks. Again, yeah. Like, you know, myself and Niall did a Seinfeld on the podcast weeks ago, and I've just been watching it since, like, you know, and I've just been like, just that show just makes me happy. Like,
you know, it's a weird thing with everything with Netflix and all this. It's not on Netflix, so...
It's on Amazon, I think.
Is it?
I don't know why they went... Why did they go for Amazon, like...
But do you have Amazon, or do you have to pay for Amazon?
It's the same as Netflix. It's a monthly subscription, like, you know. And they make their own stuff as well. Like, I paid for it because I wanted to see that... I paid for it for, like, the free trial, so I didn't pay for it at all. But I wanted to see...
I paid for the free trial.
The free trial, yeah. Let me give you a few quid for that free trial. But I wanted to see the Grateful Dead documentary.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant. Like, and but maybe it's I'll pay for 6 hours free
trial too. Tomorrow.
But the Grateful Dead documentary, I don't know if you, even if you don't give a shit about the Grateful Dead, it's really good, like, you know.
I saw a documentary on Netflix about, I think it was about them basically, but it was about the guitarist. The
Bob Weir documentary.
Yeah, yeah. So that I'm sure there's a lot of crossover with the.
There is. Yeah.
But
it's more about Jerry in the one on Amazon, like, you know.
And it's like, I love all that stuff. I'm same as you. We watch documentary, but and think with any guy with a banjo. What's his name? Doesn't matter. He's got a banjo. He had a life. You know.
Will you hear about it?
He used to work down the docks.
And
he was a busker.
There's like a whole episode nearly about their sound system, because they designed this sound system that hit the audio. Like, apparently when they did those big gigs, the sound guys had to get there the day before and set up this insane fucking PA they had. Like, you know, they had these special mics that would get the most direct version of their voice and project it out to the audience. Like, the huge fucking walls of speakers, like, you know, scientifically designed for the clearest sound possible, and it's bonkers. It really
even though they're all on acid.
Even though everyone and half the people are out in the fucking car park listening to it, like, you know.
Maybe the reason that they were so freaked out from their trips that they were like going, that sounds not good enough, that to annoy somebody so enough to go, okay, we're going to have to sort out these speakers to get the most direct sound of my voice going into that fucker's ear over there and all those other people, and we want to kind of spread it out, like, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's really worth the watch, though. It's very, very good. It's a good documentary.
I'm tempted now. I'm definitely going to go for the free trial, but we'll see if it goes beyond that.
Oh yeah, yeah. He says pointing at beer.
Pointing at that beer.
This is what this podcast has become, though, Neil. In the time since you've been on it, myself and Niall are kind of wasted on it a lot of the time.
Beercast.
Yeah.
And we're on the kind of quality.
The Bob Sweet Modcast.
Around the quality, the Perno.
Peroni.
The Perno. That would be a different podcast.
So, Neil, when do you think this album is going to be out for people to listen to?
I'd say, when are we? The end of April? I would hope by May. I'd say by early June, if I can get it together, get a date to do them. I think it's going to be about 3 days, realistically, to kind of master it and mix it. But I think, like, today went so well and everything else is practically done, it's just a matter of getting down and master mixing it. So let's put a date out there. It could be a lie,
but June 1st.
Yeah, June 1st. That's, you know, it's kind of when you can remember it. And that gives us like most of the summer.
Well, you still have to do a cover and everything for it, like, you know. And you were taking a few snaps today while we were playing, like, so something like that, man, it might end up on there.
I've got all these cool black and white photos now that would be, say if we had this imaginary vinyl record and the inner sleeve would have all these like squares of like, I don't know, 10 or 15 black and white photos, you know, that kind of look. And But I still don't know what the front cover is going to be. It's going to be called High to Low, because I've already said that, so I can't get
look at the back of it.
Yeah, I'm happy with that, but it's now getting a kind of an image or a picture to go with it. And High to Low could be, on an a close up of like a dial and an amplifier going high to low.
Yeah, that could be the
tide. That's it. It could be your frame of mind, you know. It could be you feel high, you feel low. It's like there's a few different things there, but it could be the volume of the song. It could be like there's a high bit in the song, there's a low bit in the song. And the same even with the, I suppose, the songs in the album, like the first song is high, it's called Higher High. By the time you get to the end, it's very low. It's kind of, it's a darker song. But there's a few things in there, but we'll work on the front cover, the main thing.
Do you think you'll do a launch, like a gig or anything like, or?
I don't know.
It's probably getting harder and harder to get that together, I'd say, is it?
It is, and it's, I suppose this album seems, I'd say there's about half of it at least that you could play live and it'd be fine. But the ones that are a bit kind of, you know, Sad About You is a bit, it's very kind of full on with the dance drum beat and stuff that it mightn't sound as good. And we did that the last gig where they just didn't sound as good live and they didn't work, even though they sounded good like on the CD or whatever. But yeah, we'll see. We'll ask around, and if people want to play a gig.
Did we do Forget the Money at the last gig?
That's, it was great.
Did you? I can't even remember now. Did we do it?
We did. It's all
did
that.
You have the sample there? Forget the Money.
Yeah, we did. We actually, I got the mini disc player, played it through the PA, and it was pretty loud. Your man was talking, and then the.
And we just played along with it, like.
Yeah, and it was actually, jeez. When you see it back, you go, that was actually really good.
I don't even, you know, that I don't have a memory of doing that.
That whole Alan Watts kind of talk and spoken word or whatever, it's class. Like, that should be on every song.
Alan Watts spoken word.
You'll see him. You come back the next day when you get the mix of the album. Be like, how come now he's on all the songs that we did today? He's talking over my singing.
And like the thing that's going to be pretty groovy for me when this comes out is that. Do you want that last beer?
Yeah.
I've got a pretty full one here. Do you
want
to take
that's
one?
That's what I wanted.
Is that like, because I kind of had it in my head, I was coming down here today to put guitar parts and everything.
Yeah.
It was mostly, I put maybe two guitar parts down, it was mostly singing, which has been pretty
amazing.
Yeah, it's been pretty cool for me, like it's sort of interesting, you know.
I knew like, because I knew there was so much like tracks of guitars and bass of that. And I knew like the main thing today would be, whether union or not, would have been
obviously the singing. I was under the wrong impression altogether.
I did give you the text to say, take your honey and lemon because you might be singing.
Yeah, I suppose you did, and I didn't. Yeah. I think
but you did.
Yeah.
You probably didn't think it was that I meant that much singing on it. The odd bit, but I just thought like this could really lift the songs and gives a chance for people to hear the great voice you have as well. And it was, you know, and today it just proved it. It was like it just really worked. I couldn't now go back to listen to just the one vocal because it's just gonna be boring. So it's like five or six songs there they've changed like from today's kind of
that's cool
singing. And the guitar playing was an extra bonus. Like guitar solo at the end of that song we did was amazing. Do you
it's
know?
Gonna burn people's ears when they hear it.
And like I think they sound okay. They're not even mixed or mastered. We're listening back to them, they sound okay, you know, like we could nearly live with those versions, but
yeah,
when we get them finished up, hopefully in the next month, that's it, we're done with them, then we should never listen to them again.
I suppose to wrap things up, do you fancy doing a song?
Yeah, we'll try one. Might be a bit hoarse, but
it's up to you. We can leave it if you want, or
if it fails, we'll edit it out, and if it works,
it's the marvel of podcasting.
And if you forget the words, we'll edit it out too. This one's called, this was just the most acoustic song on the thing. It's called Sorry Now. I don't remember when it was written, but
here she comes, oh, take me home, I cannot watch again. She's walking through the crowd within me, I've nothing to see. So grey lights up.
I'll do it last time.
So I've been doing this all day, man, don't worry about it.
she comes, oh, take me home. I cannot watch again. She's walking through the crowd with him, and I've nothing to say. Cigarette lights up, and you see me. I wish you'd go away. Say hello, and I will smile. It's tearing up my face. I never meant to bring trouble on your head. And I never learned from mistakes I've made. Sorry now, as you're walking out the door, 'cause I never go see you anymore. And that's so. Baby, I could steal you back, just tell me what to say. The night is done and I have run, and always be there late. So if I go out of your sight and find somewhere to stay, stay all night with those I'm like, I walk into the rain. Never meant to bring trouble on your head. And I never learned from mistakes I've made. Sorry now, 'cause you're walking.
Dreadful.
No, that sounded amazing.
So
that's time lucky.
That's gonna be one take wonder.
Mm.
That's gonna be On High to Low, which is gonna be the album by Neil O'Connor. It's coming out early June.
Hopefully.
that'll
be the slowest song on it.
That is true, actually. That's actually
the rest
fairly
is
unrepresentative of the rest of the album, like, but you gotta pick one you can sing in the shed.
Yeah.
At night.
The rest is noise.
Yeah.
But not so, Nine Inch Nails.
No, not like Nine Inch Nails. So, do you want to give a shout out to the other? Is it, there's three musicians on it mainly? Is it myself? There's yourself, but there's
me,
also
myself and I. No, there's Bushy, my cousin, my musical partner as well. Kenneth Coyne, who plays bass and a bit of guitar on this album, and there's Danny, who plays some guitar on this and amazing vocals, and hopefully on 1st of June, if that's the date, we'll hear it all come together.
Well, thanks for involving me, man. This has been great. This has been such a cool weekend of making music, and I'm really looking forward to making people laugh. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing how the whole thing turns out. And thanks for singing the tune for the podcast. It sounded great. I was only joking when I said that it was dreadful. I just couldn't help myself. Thanks very much, everybody, for downloading and listening, etc. I was going to say go and see Niall's play, but I think by the time anyone hears this, the run will be over. So if you've seen Niall's play,
buy Niall's record.
Buy Niall's album. I hope you all enjoyed it. Myself and Niall will be back with you at some point soon talking about... what on earth were we talking about?
Bottle tops.
We were doing the Manic Street Preachers new album, and what was the film that Niall got me to watch? Valerian and the Planets or something. Whatever that Luc Besson sci-fi thing that came out last year was. We're going to be talking about that on the next podcast. So thanks very much and have a great week.